This is the Final Round Podcast, coming to you live from the FingerLakes1.com studios in downtown Seneca Falls, New York. And now your host, Chris Marquardt.
Good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to the Final Round Drag Racing Podcast, episode number 58 on deck here. I had to refresh my memory on that one. It's been so long. Jason, back with us. Well rested and recovered from the trip to the Great White North, and then subsequently the Great White East, making the trip out to the land that time forgot in Albany.
Albany, correct, yeah.
Had a bunch of meetings out there, shuffled the schedule a little bit, but it really worked out for the best tonight. If it does come off as though we may have shortened the show a little bit on the back end, they do have sectional basketball coverage that we are trying to make sure that we can squeeze in between here on Finger Lakes 1. But
I love being preempted for high school basketball.
If we go all the way to the 8 o'clock hour, we should be okay. But fortunate to have a good guest along with us tonight. We've got John joining us here. John Sebastian is going to be on to talk a little bit about the Niagara Reunion racing at Lancaster. He's got a bunch of photos that is sent to us that recap a very busy career, and then. Kind of a weird little twist on the side is all the model background.
Right.
I mean, these cases and cases of models. We saw some custom Jim Zakia cars, and then some of them from your family.
Right.
It's really cool stuff. So
it is some really cool stuff for sure. I mean,
to not delay any further, you know, John's waiting in the wings here. John, how are you?
Hi, how are you? Good.
We're doing good. Thanks for coming on the show and hanging out with us for a little while.
Thank you for the invite.
Absolutely. I know you were nervous about it, but basically it's just you talking on the phone with us about racing, and how bad could that be?
Not bad at all. My favorite subject.
Well, that's pretty fortunate, and I know you got a good history with Jason. You've got a good history with Niagara. You got a history with Lancaster. You've got this gorgeous Chevelle that's been pictured all over the place. I guess, I mean, there's a bunch of places I know that I want to start with it, but how about for you? I mean, what's the thing that jumps off the page most to you over your drag racing career that sort of got your attention and has got you to this point and keeps you busy with it?
You know what? I was thinking of when Jason asked me about the show, like, interest in cars, what started it all. Mm-hmm. I think it started when I was a kid, watching my dad and my grandfather work on their cars. I was always interested in, you know, what made them tick.
Sure.
And every time the hood was open, they had their toolboxes out, I was out there watching them. Probably in the way, but I was watching them and, you know, wanted to learn. And when I was old enough to get my own car, of course, first thing you do is hot rod it up.
Right. Now, they were tinkering with that, or were they were prepping it for race?
Oh, no, they were just their everyday cars.
That's
my parents, yeah, my dad and my grandpa. There was any maintenance they did on their own, I was watching them.
This was back in the day when you changed the oil, you pulled the plug and let the oil run all over the driveway?
Right. They were putting points in, a muffler, whatever they were doing. I was out there, had my bike laying on the curb watching them, you know. And even the cars back in the day, you know, from our neighborhood. I could remember every muscle car that was around. You know, it just got me interested, you know, in the muscle cars and racing. And when we were kids, you know, if we passed our school, the grade, my mom would say, okay, you guys can pick something special to do. You know, we'll take you somewhere over the summer. I wanted to go to Lancaster.
Right. Perfect.
Wanted to go watch the races.
You know, it's funny, John, that you mentioned that just because of the fact that, you know, Phil Harnden, I mean, it's like when he was a kid, it was basically the same thing for him, right? I mean, right. He would go down to the corner from his family farm and basically hitch a ride to, you know, right. What's now South Butler Dragway.
Okay.
You know, he was 10 years old. It's like, you know, that's what he wanted to do. And, you know, at the time he was lucky enough, I guess, that it's slightly different culture, I guess. It was perfectly okay to go hitch a ride at the corner, but yeah, his mom was totally okay with that, and that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to go hang out and watch the race cars.
Yeah, back then, I mean, all the neighborhood garages, gas stations, there was always somebody that had a hot rod there, a race car. You know, visually would get your attention, and I want to go see that car. And Jason, you know, Dan and Doug Fahey, ironically, their old Chevy 2 called Super 2. It was a metallic blue, like a merino blue color when we were kids.
Yeah.
He stored it around the corner from our house in the city.
Okay.
One day you hear that thing fire up, every kid with an earshot, we'd be out there watching him load this thing up. He'd make a pass up the street, turn around on Niagara Street, he'd go back up the other way, blast it. and I seen that car go on the trailer. I saw the silver lettering on it, saw the Hillborn injectors, the Krager mags, and it was just phenomenal to me. It blew my mind. You see the beautiful lettering and, you know, shiny, loud race car. I was like, wow, I got to do this. This was my, that was the injection.
Yeah.
Injection joke, it never gets old. I think it's interesting that this is, I think, one of the first guests, at least in a quick spin through the Rolodex, that didn't have a direct connection to racing but still found his way into it.
Most of our guests, John, generally it's like, oh well, my dad raced, or my uncle raced, or my grandfather raced, or certainly you're definitely one of the first that, if not the first, that basically said, yeah, I mean, I just was a car fanatic, right? It's like I just saw cars and fell in love with them.
That was it. I wanted to be a part of it. I'm fortunate enough to grow up in that era to see them, you know, like, I mean, back then there were everyday cars in the street. You know, you'd see a Roadrunner, a Chevelle, a Camaro, who had a trailer, took it to the track.
Right.
I had cousins that had hot rods when we were kids. You know, we'd always be looking at those cars with the big eyes, you know, envying them. And, you know, but the first time going to the races, it was like, wow, I mean, I got to do this. It was just my own, you know, from my first street car, going through the ranks, you know, breaking pieces, fixing it, you know, whatever.
It's funny too, because, you know, that era was when you know, cars were all towed to the track, either on ramp trucks or on open trailers, right?
Yeah.
So you got to see all of them as well, which, you know, once the enclosed, I have to say that I would never go back to an open trailer, but that was definitely a cool era from that standpoint.
I think it was a draw. I was talking to some friends about that. You know, even just towing to the track, you get people stopping at the red light talking to you about your car. Now they think you're a landscaper. They don't know this race. They don't know what you're hauling. I mean, to spike their interest, to get spectators to the track.
Right. I say, funny story, and this is a bit of an aside. John McGowan and I, we were moving one day, moving from one house to an apartment or something like that, and we had his race car trailer filled up with furniture and stuff, and this little girl is walking down the street with her dad, and she's like, Dad, what's he got in there? And he's like, oh, he's got a race car in there. And we had the side door open. When they got to the side door, they stopped and looked in, and the little girl says, that's not a race car. He's got junk. But, you know, it's funny because, like you said, I mean, people with an enclosed trailer nowadays, you know, unless you have it all lettered up and something on the side of it, people just think, like I said, you're a landscaper or a mover or something like that.
Nothing wrong with them. I may love them, but you know what? It's just the visual aspect. You know, it doesn't, you know, like for a kid, you pull up next to them in traffic, they don't know what it is.
That's right.
You know, and here at the house, if I have my car outside sometimes in the summer, I'll get a neighborhood kid. They'll be at the sidewalk looking up, wondering if it's okay to come and look at it, you know.
Right.
Yeah, come on, look at it, sit in it, whatever, you know.
Yeah, I would say Chris has got a picture of the Chevelle up right now. Actually, I think, so the picture is you kind of sitting on the front end, and I saw
really
some.
I really wasn't sitting. I was just very lightly holding my butt up.
like any good collision guy would be doing.
Right.
And I think I saw somebody ask if that was on Ohio Street.
That was. My daughter bought me a photo package from a photographer one year for my birthday.
Okay.
And I couldn't think where to go. I had like an hour with this woman, and she did a great job, so we ended up going there. And I told her, I wish you could see the visions in my head of what went on down here. To you, it's a bike path, you know,
right,
on the side of the Skyway. If I could put the pictures in my head on a video screen, I go, you would be in awe.
Yeah.
So we spent a little time down there taking some pictures.
Yeah, that's super cool. And I guess for those that are outside of the Buffalo area that are watching / listening that don't know, Ohio Street was kind of the place to street race back in the day in the Buffalo area. And actually, yeah, Chris just threw up your Ohio Street street sign that also says drag strip painted on underneath it.
Yep.
And yeah, that was definitely a different era, you know?
It was. You know what? And I always say I'm fortunate to have been a part of it, to have witnessed it, and the memories I wouldn't trade for anything. You know, made a lot of great friends, a lot of great times, innocent fun for the most part, you know.
Yeah, right.
yeah, it was harmless, pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So now your brother was older than you, right?
Nope, Chuck's younger.
Oh, Chuck's younger than you. All right. So who was racing first then? I'm guessing you were racing first, yeah, then, if you were older.
Yes.
Okay. I for some reason I always thought that your brother raced before you.
No. I had my license first. In fact, the Orange Roadrunner was my first attempt at racing legally.
Okay.
I had a lot of fun with that car. Chuck had his 57 Chevy.
Yep.
The red one that was actually built by Dudley. Dave Dudley back half that car.
Yep.
And then he did the red and silver 55 Chevy. That was a tube chassis car that we kind of did together. He had that from, I think, 95 to about 2001. And he had a lot of good luck with that car. He was a sharp driver. I think we had the only car in the hot pits without a box in it. No electronics other than a line lock and a
tiny. Right, yep.
He was sharp at the tree. The car always ran consistent. And this is my motor for my Chevelle, and it's just basically an LS7. GM block, GM heads, you know, crank. Knock on wood, it's still ticking. It's still running.
I guess I didn't realize that you put the motor from... So you put, I guess, at the time, the motor from the Chevelle in that car?
Yes.
Okay, and that didn't go back in the Chevelle. You built a new motor then for the Chevelle, right?
Oh, that's still the same motor.
Oh, okay. All right.
Just change the oil pan to go back in my car. That was it.
Well, how about that for some longevity?
Yeah, it's been running around. It's been freshened a few times, but knock on wood, it's the old girl's still running.
Let's take a step back for a moment. So let's go back to the Roadrunner. So the Roadrunner, Chris showed a picture of that as you were kind of pulling up the line at Lancaster.
Okay.
Now, was that wasn't your first car, I'm assuming.
No, that was, let me think, my first car, I had a 70 Chevelle, and I totaled that street racing. Didn't learn my lesson. You'd think I would have learned my lesson, but I didn't. After the verbal lashing from my parents and whatnot, recouped, licked my wounds. I bought a second Chevelle, a 69, had that for a short time, and I got the Roadrunner.
Okay. And
my father hated most of my cars, always grumbled when I brought something home, you know, jacked up, mag wheels, loud, you know. The Roadrunner was a nice car. It was a really solid, clean car. I was 17 years old when I had that car.
Wow.
It was a 3.8-3.4 speed. I had it first, basically from a springtime till around Halloween. I had it for summer, and the only reason I sold it, the cops used to follow me all over the place with it.
Yeah.
The car, it was just marked.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's not hard to see a bright orange Roadrunner, right?
Yeah, yep.
I would say it's funny too, because you talk about, you know, the two Chevelles, the one that was wrecked. I mean, just that Chevelle. So what, the Chevelle that you wrecked, what was that car?
That was just, it was a 70 Chevelle Malibu. It wasn't a super sport.
Okay.
That car had like 63,000 miles on it, I remember. And of course, I did the usual stuff, jacked it up, put some fat tires on the back, you know, some bucket seats from a Camaro.
Yeah.
I had headers, dual exhaust. Nothing fast, nothing fancy, but for a kid, you know, it was your dream. You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it, you know, you think about wrecking that car, and it's like, oh, man, I'm sure you'd love to have that car back, right?
The Roadrunner, yes. The Chevelle, the first Chevelle, yeah, it was cool, but the Roadrunner was cooler. My 64 Impala, I'd love to have back. Say the Roadrunner, the 56 Chevy was kind of neat, too. In fact, that's out your way. That's in Rochester.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit about that before we went on the air. So, I mean, Chris is, I would say he's like furiously going through pictures, trying to find pictures. What is that? Is
that's
that
a 64?
Oh, that's a 64.
That's a 64. With the way he's talking about cars, it might be the third or fourth 64 young.
Right. So this one, actually, it says Furman Drag Strip in the background, the one that he's got a picture of up.
64, yeah.
And so that was the 64 that you were just mentioning.
Yes, I bought that when I was 18 years old.
Yeah, that's a cool looking car for sure.
That was beautiful. It was impeccable. It was solid. We used to go to Pat's on Sheridan Drive.
Yeah.
Then Jafafa's, a bunch of guys. My friend Sean Beatty, the Kochi, Herbal, a bunch of guys. We'd all be, you know, stirring up trouble, trying to get a raise.
It's funny, you know, I forgot. I don't know why I forgot until just recently, but I completely forgot about Jafafa's. you know, I'm too young really to remember Jafafas. I barely remember Pats.
Okay.
But I was talking to somebody the other day, and I was just mentioning to him, young kid, and we were talking about, you know, how on Sheridan Drive, it's like, oh yeah, you know, if you wanted a hot dog, it's like you go to Louie's or Pat's or Ted's. And I was telling him, you know, the story about how Pat's was kind of the place to hang out, you know, for hot rodders and stuff like that. But I completely forgot about Jafafas.
It was like Hollywood Nights. Yeah, Pat's was on Sheridan and Parker, I believe. I think it's a Walgreens now.
Yeah.
But, it was something. You know, you think about the cars that were there between, they say, Pat's, Jafafas, the cars we saw on Ohio Street. It was like, now you see them on the auctions and they're worth a 401k.
Right, right.
This one took a little bit of looking at to figure out what it was, but can you place what that one is?
I would have guessed that was a 442.
It's a 75 Hurst Olds.
Yeah.
Oh, the Hurst Olds?
Yeah. Yep.
The black one, yep, that was just an everyday car back then, too. Cheap, I bought it just the right price, and it was just a winter-summer car. I had my Impala in the garage, and that was my go-to-work car.
You can see the Impala in the shadows.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
I saw a little duty on Ohio Street too once or twice, the Hurst Olds.
That was a
It was a nice car too, rare. That is, they didn't make many of them. I didn't realize it at the time.
Yeah,
no, that's I had a double take at it. I didn't recognize it. At all. I mean, I didn't even pin it as close to a 442 for that matter.
Yeah,
that was a nice car too. It was a nice.
This is the one that Jason was waiting to see right here.
Tell me about the gasser, that's 56.
The 56, I had that just after the Roadrunner. I think I was 17 still.
Wow, really?
That car was an old Dunkirk Dragway car a friend of mine had in high school. Ironically, I saw that car and my Roadrunner, they were both friends, racing on Ohio Street, and I ended up owning both of those cars. but I got vision, that car bouncing down Ohio Street, the 55 with the straight axle, and the guy that owned the Roadrunner. But the 55 had a, when he got it, had an old fuel shut off on the dash, it had old Stuart Warner gauges, he had a 400 in it with a ton of RAM and a 4-speed.
Now, did you buy it complete?
I bought it rolling.
Okay.
And I did some stuff to it. I think I worked on it for a while, and I ended up getting rid of it.
Did you ever finish it? Did you ever drive it?
No. No, that car I never finished.
Okay, because I was curious. It's like, you know, what, at 18 when you bought that?
I had to be 17, 18, because I had the Roadrunner at 17. It had to be around that time, 17, because I bought the Impala when I was 18.
Okay. I mean, and that's, you know, so I'm thinking, it's like, all right, so here you are, a 17-and-a-half-year-old kid, and you buy this car. It's like, what was your plan at the time?
That car? I wanted to make it like just a nice street slash show type cruise car, maybe race it, of course, a little bit down there, and... I was basically prettying it up. I remember the body was off it was setting on the frame. I just started putting it together. I worked on it for a summer, and I missed not having something to drive. And I said, this thing's going to take me forever. I did have an LT1 for it with a cross ram and my 4-speed. I think I had a couple months these, but back then these cars were, you know, they weren't a lot of money.
Right.
The Roadrunner, I think, was like $1,500. My first Chevelle was $500. At 55, I don't think it was $1,000, you know.
You see the
Impala, I didn't pay much for. You know, I don't know what you guys thinking. I'm rolling in money. Just, I worked and saved my money. And
you paid $1,500 for the Roadrunner?
Yeah. $1,200, $1,500, something like that.
Oh, $1,200 or
$1,500. It could have been $800. I'm not. I have to say that, you know, when I
was it like half a Roadrunner?
They were secondhand cars, you know.
Now, I guess so. Let me ask this question. And so, what year was that when you bought the Roadrunner?
It had to be 1981.
Wow.
Yeah, 1981. You know what? It was, because I graduated. I think I got that car the day I graduated, because I told my parents I didn't want to go to my graduation. I wanted to stay home and clean that car and get ready for the road. My mother made me go, you're going to your graduation.
Yeah, and I will say that I remember looking at cars, you know, in the mid-80s. So I got my license in 86, and I remember looking at cars in the, let's call it, you know, 84, 85 range.
Right. Yeah, we're not that far apart.
Yeah, they had started to appreciate in value, though, yeah, a little bit to the point.
A little more collectible.
Yeah, to the point where I couldn't, they were like $3,000 to get into something like that. And it was like, oh man, I wish I had it, but I just don't have $3,000 to do something like that. And obviously, I wish I could turn the clock back,
you
right?
You could have got a nice four-door satellite wagon for $1,585.
Right. No, oh, probably. Yeah, probably. But I didn't want that, right? Until I get the, I mean, that's the crazy thing. I mean, you could have got an 85, not a Hemi, but you could have got a 440 all day. For $3,000, $3,500
Right.
And yeah, I wish I could turn the clock back because I would take every penny, I would take everything that I own today except for the Corvette, sell it. I would travel back in time, buy every car that I could back then, and then come back in time with all those cars and I'd be a bazillionaire.
Yep, that's the truth.
You'd fast forward through the space-time continuum and,
that's right,
and be dead broke with no cars and not know how it happened.
That's right. That's right. But, yeah, I mean, so in 81, just between 81 and 85, I mean, they appreciated in value basically 100%.
They did. They really, the market went nuts.
And I guess that kind of makes sense because you think about that. I remember that time frame. There was a ton of inflation going on during that time, not just in cars itself, right, but
in air.
It was in everything. Yeah, it was in everything. I mean, gas prices went through the roof. Housing prices went through the roof.
Yeah.
So the 55 now, well, oh, Chris was going to go back to another picture, but I'm not done with the 55. Oh, come on.
The red and silver one?
No. The yellow 55.
Okay.
So that car, you never finished it. You sold it.
Yep.
You said that car's out in Rochester now.
Yes, it's red. I recognized the front shackles when I saw the picture of it. There's a guy on Facebook, also Bill Walton.
Okay.
On the Niagara Bay. He had some pictures posted, and I sent him some.
I know him.
I go, that's definitely my old car, so I told him what I knew about it, and I told him I do have some pictures of it if your friend wants them, but, you know, some interior shots and whatnot of how I had it, but,
So does he own the car now?
I don't believe so. Somebody he knew in Rochester. I know it's a bright red.
Okay.
And it's still got the straight axle. That car actually had an old set of magnesium wheels, Halamines, I think was the name, from like the very early 60s.
Okay.
In fact, Jeff Kryan has the front ones off that car, ironically. I think Halamines was before American Mags. I think they bought them out. But, they were light, I remember, on that car.
Quick aside to the story that John's telling, Bill Walton that he's talking about, either Bill Senior or Bill Junior. I worked with Bill Junior.
Okay.
And they have an AMC Marlin.
Okay.
That is, it's red, white, and blue. It is awesome. It's all original. It's not like they've gone through, repainted it, and done anything crazy. You know, all the trim still has the pits and stuff in it. It's a really cool looking car.
Wow. He may know where that car is. I know it's in your area. And you may know the guy that owns it. I'd love to see it again. All these years would be neat to... Wow.
Yeah, that would definitely be cool. I will say that I know that I'm Facebook friends with Bill Walton.
Yes, me also.
Yeah, we'll have to see if we can
work
get
on that.
Bill on the show and talk about some of the cars that he has and see if he can tell us where that old 55 is.
Right. That'd be neat. That would be real cool.
So can you shift gears now?
So, yes, we can shift gears. Go ahead.
Yes.
So go ahead.
This is the, I assume it's a Trans Am.
That is a Trans Am.
Right. It's not like it's a clone that you, I mean, you're judging by your story.
The black one, yeah. That was an everyday car, too. That was my, the Impala in the background, that was my toy.
Mm-hmm.
The Trans Am was my everyday car for a couple years.
But that wasn't a clone. It's not like you started finding pieces someplace and built it. That was legit.
No, that was a legitimate Trans Am. It was actually silver when I bought it. It had only like 30,000 miles, but it was faded, and I ended up painting a black lacquer and put the gold decals on it, except for the big gold bird on the hood, because I don't like that. But
you didn't like the Super Chicken?
Screaming Chicken, nah. And it was expensive back then. It was like $300, I think.
Right.
I mean, geez, back then.
That car my dad liked, ironically. That one in my Chevy he liked.
Geez, for $300 back then, you could have bought a Vega wagon or something.
That's right.
And that car, I kept it 3 years, and the only reason I sold it was because I bought the Chevelle then, and I needed something to tow with.
So you bought your current Chevelle then?
Yes. Yeah, oh. I couldn't tow the car with the Trans Am. So.
Yeah. So when did you buy? So what year was that you bought the your Chevelle now?
I think it had to be 87. I sold the Impala in June that year.
Yeah.
And I was working at Gordon part time, and I was looking for a car. And I didn't originally want a Chevelle. I wanted something older. I wanted like a Willys or
okay.
a shoebox Chevy.
Yep.
And Freddie Bauer at Gordon, he was the manager. We're yep. talking. I said, you know, I'm just gonna save the Impala money and I'm gonna look in the National Tracks or something, and he was sitting there tapping his pen and he told me about the Chevelle. He says, there was a guy that worked here. He was all through the 70s. His name was Mike Ebert. And he told me about the car. He goes, you know what, you, John, you know, this, that, and everything. He goes, ends up getting his number, his phone number, calls him. And ironically, Mike was just about to put the car for sale. And it was built by Jim Oddie and Dave Dudley back in the day.
Okay.
In Oddie's mother's garage when he had the Opel.
Yeah.
They used to push the Opel outside and work on the Chevelle. Mike didn't have a garage at the time. And so I snoozed on it at first, and then I went and looked at it, and I'm like, wow. I couldn't believe how it was like a time capsule. It just was so preserved. It was, I mean, the workmanship was beautiful.
Yeah.
And Mike ran the old gas. There was a G-Gas car. He had the small block there, you know, yeah. high winding small block. He had the Doug Nash, you know. And we talked a little bit. I went back, looked at it again, and we talked turkey and made a deal. And Paul Kochi actually towed it home for me. I didn't have a way to get it. Oh. Paul ended up coming with his trailer. And I said, Mike owned that car about 18 years, and I've had it 32 now, 32
wow.
years. Jeez. But his son I'm friends with still, Mike Jr.
Yeah.
And his uncle, Dave. And I always tell the guys, like, you know what, this is still your dad's car and your, you know, your uncle. I go, I'm the caretaker of it.
Yeah.
You know, and I says, yeah, I painted it. I've done some updates to it, but, and they appreciate that the car is still, you know, it's never been cut up or, you know, more modified.
Right.
I appreciate the work. I appreciate the history of it. You know, the car, he parked it when Niagara closed, Mike, in 1975.
Okay.
Sat in his garage all those years. He bought it in 1970 and he raced it till 75 and then he parked it. But, thing I love about the car is all the body's original.
Yeah.
It's not aftermarket.
Yep.
You know, quarter panels or floor pan. Every piece on that car other than the rearview mirror outside is what came on that car. A couple guys at the races like, you're nuts for racing this. What if something happens? Like, oh, I'd always fix it. I would always fix it if something happened, but hopefully it won't.
Now, you said that car's never been cut up, modified, anything beyond what it was originally, but you had it apart and redid it, right?
The Chevelle?
Yeah.
Yes, when I first bought the car, it was partially primed. The front clip, the fiberglass front end was in primer, and Mike had some of the chrome off of it. So back in the 80s, I sanded it down, and I remember 14 coats of lacquer on it, 7 coats of base in blue and 7 coats of clear, and it was like that for a long time, looked great. And then 1 year, just from racing it, every panel had a little chip or a little mark. Jason, you know what that's like.
Oh, yeah.
And I just got a, I don't know, brainstorm. I stripped it. And I took it all. In fact, the motor was in the 55 at the time. And so my car was sitting idle, so I said, so this is the perfect time. I stripped it down, took my time, and I did a nice, the blue that it is now, just did the base coat, clear coat with the urethane. It's a little more stronger. I don't think it shines like lacquer, but it's not. It's 20 years old, this paint job.
Now, is that the picture, Chris showed a picture of the car on the rotisserie. Is that when you redid the car?
Oh, no, that's a Mustang that I'm working on for a guy. That's Kevin Peters from Janssen.
Oh, okay.
That's right. His car.
Had me fooled.
Okay. Yeah, it's funny you mention about, you know, it's funny you mention about the paint, because I know that you're a body collision guy, right? So I know you know all about this stuff. So, you know, my dad's Corvette, Mike Shillali painted that in 1977,
wow.
and that
wow.
was a lacquer paint job.
Is it really?
And then we had the car, Jim Cristiano painted it, repainted it, and I want to say it was 88 maybe when he repainted it. And by that time, I mean, the car wasn't terrible, but like I said, I mean, there were just little cracks and stuff like that. And
race car wounds.
Yeah, right, exactly. And though the car looked great, I never felt like that anything looked like that lacquer. I always felt like the lacquer was just incredible from a look standpoint.
Right, from a reflective standpoint, the depth. Urethane shine great, but to me, I think a lacquer paint job will outshow it any day. I mean, you got to take care of them, but...
Now, is that really the main reason why people went away from lacquer? Is just because of the fact that the urethane is just so much more durable?
I think that, and I think the chemicals, too.
Okay, I would say, because I thought that maybe that had something to do with the chemicals. That was my impression, but...
OSHA restrictions, and now they're all using the waterborns, and yeah, there's different legal stuff.
Can you still buy and paint in lacquer if you want to?
There are places that sell it. Yeah, you can still get it.
Urine,
it's tough to find, but there are places that you can get some.
Yeah.
I still got a gallon of black sitting here, an orphan gallon of black lacquer.
Oh, no kidding. Well, we'll find a bicycle to paint or something.
I know, right? Old refrigerator.
Right.
Shiniest Huff you've ever seen.
Flames on it.
Yeah, so there's a picture. So Chris has got a picture of the Chevelle now when it's blue. It's at a show someplace, but the show doesn't look familiar to me. It doesn't look like the Buffalo Convention
it's
Center.
Dyer it's in the background.
It is, Jason, yep.
Is it? It's at the convention center, really?
Yes. That's the year you and your uncle were there.
Oh, no kidding.
I had him sign my helmet.
Yeah.
And, I took a couple pictures. In fact, you're going to laugh. He sat in my folding chair there. And I told my, we took a picture. I told my daughter, take a picture of him. And nobody's ever sat in that chair since.
That's funny. Yeah. I would say, I guess that's a good, somewhat of a good segue, actually, just because I believe going to see my uncle this weekend.
Are you?
Yeah. And I know you and I have talked about this. And one of the things that, you know, we want to talk about on the show here too is, you know, you and your model and model building and and so I guess that's what I said. It's kind
Can
of
we get on the reunion quick before we do that.
Make sure,
we get the reunion stuff done.
Well, it's totally up to you. You're the host. You run the show.
You're in control.
I thought that's where you're going in terms of the nostalgia being at the show.
Well, that's a good point.
Stuff.
Sure, that's a good
I thought
point,
you were
absolutely.
Going the direction of the reunion and how we've got. Date now set for the
Niagara
Drag Strip reunion, March the 24th from 12 to 4, and it's going to be at the Buffalo Sports Garden.
Yep.
You guys got to be pretty excited about that coming together.
Yeah, Jeff Cryan does that from the Gasser Gang.
Right.
That's his doing, and the Gasser guys, but it's a great turnout. They almost need a bigger venue. It gets very crowded, but it's a good time.
Yeah,
it's a good time. See a lot of guys that you haven't seen in years. It's a good day to hang out and BS and do some bench racing and some remembering and look at some cool videos and pictures. And I look forward to it. It's a good time.
Yeah, I will say that, we had Dean Johnson on. I don't know that there was a date set when we had Dean on the show.
There wasn't. Okay. There was a lot of conversation, but I don't think there was a date.
Yeah, yeah.
But March the 24th is that. It's the Niagara Drag Strip Video Reunion. Historic Films of the Drags. It's going to be 10-plus TVs at the Buffalo Sports Garden. Donations $5 a person at the door. The video reunion is brought to you by the Gasser Gang of Western New York and Buffalo Sports Garden. As you mentioned, Dean Johnson is going to be accredited with some of that effort. We also got Jeff and Harv involved. March the 24th, 12 to 4, on the Niagara Drag Strip video reunion.
And it's all Jeff and the Gasser Gang. I'm just a spectator. I have no accolades to me for that. That's all Jeff's doing, his videos. And but it is a good time. It's a good day.
I was saying, I was looking at my calendar, the 23rd I am booked, but I am not booked on the 24th. So in theory, I should be able to make it on Sunday the 24th.
That's a good time.
Oh, yeah. We went, last time I was there, actually, me and my uncle went there. And I know that he wasn't feeling great that day, and, we didn't stay for the whole time. But, we went, we spent a couple hours there, and he enjoyed himself seeing everybody. Yeah, it's like I said, it does get crowded. It's unbelievable, actually, how crowded it gets in there.
Right.
I guess I would tell you, if you need a seat, get there early.
Yeah, big interest in it. There's a big following.
Yeah, I know.
I love it.
I know when we were there, we were nice enough to be able to walk in, even though we were late, and somebody gave up their seats for us, so we were able to sit down. But yeah, it's a cool time for sure, and obviously well worth the $5.
Sure, see a lot of guys that you don't see. Some of the older guys come out, and it really is good to hear their stories. You know,
I had seen Del Clark there, Del Clark Jr. Okay. And that had been the first time that I had seen Del Clark in probably 15 years, I bet.
Wow.
And so, yeah, it was super cool, basically, be like, holy cow, what the heck have you been up to?
Wow.
So, yeah, it's definitely a good time. I recommend anybody that's, I guess, a Niagara or even a Lancaster racer from, you know, the 80s, certainly, to make sure you get out there.
I know I have a lot of videos, too. Jeff wants to go through himself to splice in some stuff. What is that? I got to get together with him on that. Let him take some of mine.
Yeah. Chris has something on his mind.
So, well, you were talking about your uncle and how important, you know, getting to that was, and everybody wanted to see him and everything like that. You know, there's a little slice of your uncle's history.
The legend.
That had been hand-fabricated.
Yep.
By John putting these together. These are not, it's not a file photo from back in the archives. Those are model cars.
Right.
From way back, which was where you were headed a minute ago with it.
Right.
I dug those pictures up and had them queued up, and it's just, he was talking about your uncle and the reminiscing. It's just, I can't believe how great these cars came out for being basically kitbashed and,
thank you.
And put together. But, you know, it's not limited just to that. I got to cut away to go back
so we can
get the other photos and stuff up.
Right,
but there's
right.
a ton of photos to weed through here. There's the Iron Butterfly
right.
sitting in the background, which that's just, I just think those are so cool.
Which I will say that I talked briefly to Dan Delaney on my way out here, and he was mentioning, he's like, yeah, make sure you go, you ask him about the Iron Butterfly. He's like, I saw that car, it's gorgeous.
Dan loves it.
Yeah, so I mean, now the Butterfly, when you built the Iron Butterfly, did you basically have to, that was the first one that I remember seeing you do of the cars that my uncle was involved with.
It could have, you know, I don't remember if I did that or the Dart first, but basically it was a box kit that I had the decals, sprayed it white, and other than I put a Hemi in it, but
yeah,
you know, just some little detail. I didn't go crazy, but it's just something I wanted to do. Like your uncle, years ago, you know, so when I started racing, and your dad, I mean, God bless him, he was a fierce racer. I mean, the guy was intense. I remember him at the track. There's times you couldn't talk to him. He just had that look. He was concentrating. You're like, don't bother him. And then realized later that your uncle was his brother. I'm like, wow, because the missile car has always been my favorite from when I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
First time seeing it on Wide World of Sports, I remember I went nuts for that car. Really, no lie. It was just like, wow. So I said, you know, you can go to a hobby store. You can get a car of Prudhomme. You can get a car of Garlitz. I want to start building a few of the local legends that, you know, the guys that, you know, you stick in your head, guys you admire. And,
right.
You know, and I said, well, who better? You know, my favorite right off the bat.
How much individual, I mean, that kit comes, there's two versions. There's the Lindbergh made both of them. One of them was a 64 Belvedere, and the other one was a 64 Dodge, and a Dodge 330, I think.
I think that's the one.
And then they came with two engine combinations in it, and one of them, I think, was like a 325, and the other one looked like a 318 or something.
Maybe a wedge motor?
Yeah, right.
I think it was a wedge, maybe a 413. I don't know, but I didn't know if he ran a Hemi in that car. I thought I remembered reading something years ago, so I scrounged around the parts box and put a Hemi in it.
Right. So, like, I'm looking at the Comet sitting next to it. How much hand fabricating do you have to do? I mean, I don't remember scoops coming on the...
And believe it or not, that's a late, a current issue of Arnie... Is that Arnie Beswick's car?
Oh, yeah, it probably is an Arnie Beswick.
Yep, and talking to Jason, because I couldn't just get the color. I found one color picture of it on the Niagara page from Dean Johnson, and it looked like it was a darker burgundy, and Jason told me it was almost identical to the Dart.
Yeah.
So, actually, I think I sprayed it a GM red I had sitting on my paint bench.
just
did a base coat, put the decals on, clear coated it, and other than changing the wheels that it came with, that's pretty much how it came.
Now, yeah, and that's, I guess that was a question that, you know, Chris and I were talking about. I'm like, the decals, how did you do all the lettering on the side of that car?
Believe it or not, I found them on eBay.
Just like that?
Yes, they are on there right now. You can go on eBay and punch in Dick Oldfield's Comet and the Dick Oldfield Dart, Hemi Dart. I forgot the man's name, but I could send it to you.
I knew they made the decals for the Dart, but I didn't realize that they made decals for the...
Just came out with them, I think, recently.
Wow, that's...
And the Iron Butterfly also.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible. I didn't realize that...
I wouldn't be able to do them. I'd be hand lettering them all shaky, or I'd be giving them to Dan Delaney.
Right, right. Yeah, so, right now Chris has got a picture up of your display case, you know, showing...
Oh, okay.
You know, the Comet and the Dart kind of sitting right next to each other. Of course,
okay.
right below the Comet is Jimmy Yachty's Anglia. Or, Jimmy Yachty's Opel.
The Opel, okay. Oh, yeah, the case, okay.
And then I can't see from here what's underneath Yachty's. Oh, is that the Chevette?
Yes, I did that a long time ago.
Did you really?
Yeah. I want to redo that one, but it was an attempt years ago. I got to correct a few things. Now Dan Delaney and myself are getting pretty passionate about it again, and so that one may get redone in the future if I get time.
Did you use one of the dealer promo Chevettes, or did you have to custom make a body for that?
Actually, I found a kit. I think it was an AMT kit, and I just used the body, scratch built the frame, and I hand lettered it myself with a couple colors, and you know, just kind of attempted it. But it was scratch built other than the body.
Yeah, that's super cool. Of course, you know, this would be a bad joke, but you should have it in the display case upside down.
Yeah, right. that's a cruel joke. You said it, I didn't.
So you weren't there, Chris, but
lose friends.
That car left the line, and it always picked the driver's side. It had so much torque compared to the wheelbase of the car. It always picked the driver's side wheel up. Well,
you're talking about the Chevette, right?
The Chevette, yeah.
Right.
So Jimmy Yachty.
Well, there's no wheelbase there.
Right, I mean, exactly. And, you know, a big blown motor, right? Tons of torque. So, yeah, one night Jimmy Yachty left the line. It picked the right front up like it, or the left front up like it always does. And he went to the left at Lancaster, which is very narrow. And he basically literally drove it up the wall and.
Wall out the roof.
Onto its roof. there was nothing.
Yeah,
I mean, really,
man.
It really wasn't damaged. It was, as far as flipping a car over, is about as soft as you could possibly do
No kidding.
Yeah.
I figured you were going to say that it came down and flexed the other way, or just rolled itself over. But no, he climbed the wall and just
it was upside. It was upside down within 100 feet.
Wheel spinning.
Right. Yeah, it was pretty incredible. But that's super cool. Now the other one too that I didn't see in the display case, we did see a picture of you with Jimmy Zakia.
Yes.
Oh,
with
yeah.
His car.
Yep.
Now I'm assuming that's in your display case still.
Pardon me?
Is that still in your display case someplace?
Yep, it's down in. I have it in a separate individual one.
Yeah.
I spent a lot of time on that one. That one almost got stepped on a few times. I mean, even the scoop I had to cut in half and section, and it was a little more involved than I anticipated, but it came out nice, and I was a little hesitant to bring it to show him, but he got a big, big charge out of it.
Why were you hesitant?
I don't know. Maybe I'm embarrassed or shy. I don't know. But he got a big charge out of it. He goes, "You probably got more time into that than I built the real car."
Yeah, that's, I have to say that is super cool.
That came out nice. They came out really nice. He was happy. I set it on the table there at the reunion. A lot of people were looking at it, complimenting it. Dan Delaney was nice enough to donate a body to me. I'd like to build one for Jimmy. So it was that point, like, he really enjoyed it. I would have loved to give it to him. I had him sign it. He didn't want to sign it. And, I got to make him one. He really seemed to like it.
Yeah, that is super, super cool. And
why didn't you want to leave it with him?
I don't know. You got so much time into it. You know, it's like, man, should I give him this one or make another one for myself? It was one of those catch-22s. I was, like, torn, 50-50.
If you truly love something, let it go. It'll come back.
Yeah, true.
I say you can, at this point, you can build a second one, see which one turns out better, and...
then you can pick.
Yeah, you can pick. Right.
There you go. Well, I got a Dart for you.
And I'm just, I have to say that I'm really, really flattered the fact that you built a dart for me. I think, you know, you and I chatted about this and I talked to you about it, that, you know, I actually sent you a picture today. I have a kit that I bought. Okay. And it's like, well, yeah, maybe one of these days I'll try and build myself a dart, because I know I knew I could get the decals, but I am not a model builder. I've told Chris. 68? The 68, yeah. Okay. I've told Chris in the past, I'm terrible at building models. It's just not my thing. And yeah, the fact that
practice.
to have someone like yourself go out of your way and build one for me, I mean, it's really, really flattering. And like I said, I believe that Saturday I'm going to go up and go up to Detroit and see my uncle. And I promised you I would take, you know, one of those models up for you. And so I know it doesn't leave us a lot of time between here Thursday night at 8 o'clock and Saturday morning when I'm leaving, but somehow, some way, you and I need to get together so I can get one of those models and take it to
you're
my
driving,
uncle.
Driving, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're coming through Buffalo, Jason, I'm not far off the William Street exit.
Yeah, I'm coming through Buffalo. So, yeah, we got to.
Anytime, any place, I'll give you all three to show them. I'll trust you with all three of them.
Well, at least got to get mine, if nothing else, I guess. And I don't know how comfortable I feel taking yours, but yeah.
I would love to have your uncle see them. That would really make me happy. If he gets a kick out of them, I think it was you told me, or Dan said, send a picture to Joe Pappas.
Yeah.
And I did, and I was nervous about it again. I was like, I don't want to bother him. He's a legend. You know, who is this guy? But he replied right away. He got a kick out of him, and he said, I will show him. He goes, I guess he meets him for lunch.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yep, he meets him for lunch. So, yeah, we'll definitely try and, like I said, get together so that I can pick that up. Pick at least mine up and take that out to him. And I'll be coming back. It's going to be a day trip. It's going to be drive out Saturday morning, drive back Saturday night. So wow. I can return anything to you Saturday night.
Whatever, buddy. Whatever.
Do you think you get your hands on a mid-80s Chevy Camaro?
Myself?
Yeah. The model, maybe. Not a car. The model.
Probably on eBay.
All right. Why? So well, we're getting closer.
Why? What are you thinking?
Well, we need to make Phil's car.
Oh.
Oh.
But also, maybe. I was wondering how good you were at building enclosed trailers.
Actually, they sell them.
All right, perfect. You need to get your hands on one and hit the front corner with a hammer.
Yeah, just smash it with a hammer.
I get it.
It'll look just like Jason's. Then we can put the Camaro coming out the back.
Right. Actually, they issued they have the Iconio Camaro.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah, you could probably. I bet you could start with Iconio's Camaro and get real, real close.
Or rear Morrison kit. They got, you know, that body style.
Yeah, I would say it's got the Phil's car is the same vintage hood scoop on the car from that year, so it'd be
production
perfect.
Production meeting plans. We don't have to play
the trailer.
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
eBay now.
We can go to eBay and surf eBay for models this evening.
There
right.
You go. Awesome. That's funny.
Yeah, and as far as a trailer model goes, I mean, I'm pretty sure I could find a white shoebox someplace and, you know, draw some wheels on it and, yeah, smash it with a hammer and we'll be done. So, thanks, Chris. I appreciate it.
You bet.
A little shot. A little jab for Jason.
It'll never go
away. I don't let my trailer out anymore.
Yeah. Definitely don't. Definitely don't.
I learned in my first one.
So one thing we didn't touch on at all, and I know we're pushing 8 o'clock here, and we're probably at this point getting preempted for high school basketball. But I guess one question I'll have is that: how did you get involved in the collision work and painting cars? Was it just out of necessity that you decided to do it on your own?
You know, honestly, I'm trying to think. I was always interested in the mechanical aspect of it.
Yeah.
And maybe back then at the races, I mean, I was always envious of the paint and lettering on the cars.
Yeah.
Guys like Dan Delaney, they're artists, you know, they're talented, I mean, beyond talent.
Right.
I think that drew me to it, seeing the colors. Back then, you see all the, you know, the paint jobs on these cars, and I wanted to learn that more than the mechanics, I think.
Yeah.
And when I was in high school, I was lucky enough, I got a couple jobs in the neighborhood in West Seneca, working at some shops as a helper. You know, learned from a couple of good guys, some old school guys that taught me good. And right out of high school, I started working at Austin Pontiac.
Oh.
West Seneca.
I saw a reference to that in one of the pictures.
Okay.
Yeah.
I worked there for a couple of years and went to a couple other dealers, Holiday Olds, as Basil Chevy, a couple shops, and you know, did it all most of my life. And then about 10 years ago, I got out of the actual hardcore collision, and I got a job at the NFTA where I am now.
Right, right.
And it's a great deal there. I love it. I wish I started there 25, 30 years ago.
Well, the nice thing is that you still get to paint cars, I guess, in your free time, right? And so, I mean, that's still your passion, you know, painting hot rods and drag cars and stuff?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, you know what? It is kind of a passion. Like, you do a project car, like, say, like this Mustang, I've done some other race cars. When I do stuff like that, I treat it like it's mine.
Yeah.
You know, when you're at the dealer, you're doing stuff, it's insurance job, it's flat rate, hurry up, get it in, get it out.
Yeah.
And you never see it again. But somebody like you or me, you got your toy, your pride and joy. And for like somebody like myself to put my hand on it and I see it out, I see it at a race, I see it at a car show, and it's kind of like, wow, I did something on that car. You know, it gives you a little pride.
Right. Well, one of these days we got to talk about you helping me do some touch-up work on the Corvette.
Absolutely.
There's some things that really bug me about the way the Corvette looks right now that I need some help with.
Absolutely, Jason. I'd be honored. Yeah. Yeah, I like doing that. I mean, if it's somebody's toy, you take some pride in, you know.
Right,
so
right.
You want to touch up your pickup truck that you use for work every day, you do a nice job on that too, because you know, it's your reputation on it. But.
Right. But yeah, I have to say that that's, you know, the reason why I don't do any of that stuff on the Corvette is because I want it to look nice, and I know that I don't have the talent to do it. So,
right.
I've seen your Chevelle. Your Chevelle's gorgeous, and I know you could do the type of job that I'd look for someone to do. So.
Well, thank you. I gotta get it out more, but.
Well, we all had that problem. So.
Yeah, time.
Well, John, man, we're just about out of time. I appreciate you coming on the show and hanging out with us for a little while.
I appreciate the info. I'm honored and humbled. I didn't expect it.
Well, we got to book another appearance because there's still more stuff from Lancaster that we didn't get into that we want to. So we've got another appearance down the line. So if you're willing to come back, we'll have you for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, I've enjoyed all my time there. Always, you know, I did it for a hobby. Didn't do it to make money. Sure. Didn't care if I win, lose. Go out, have a good time, hang out with my friends. You know, a lot of great guys throughout the years. Too many to even think of mentioning, but even the guys that helped me with my car over the years, my friends, you know, from the neighborhood. I got, you know, my buddy Dave Zimfer, Eric Bertozzi, my brother Chuck. My guys would be out there till 2 or 3 in the morning. You know, if we're going racing, and something, you know, we had to get something done. You know, we did it, but we did it because we loved doing it. Mm-hmm. We weren't getting rich, but it was our hobby.
Right. Sure. Well, you know, the next time around, we're going to dive into that a little bit deeper when we have you back. I look forward to it. Again, I appreciate you coming on the show and keep in touch with
thank
me.
Thank you,
and
Chris. Jason, you too.
And
you guys.
Jason, we'll definitely have you back.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks, John.
A lot, man. We'll see you later.
If you want to hang out, I'll talk to you about that thing to hook up.
I'll message you in a bit.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, John.
Thank you, guys.
All right. See ya.
There goes
John Sebastian.
We got missed phone calls. 3 missed phone calls, 9 missed phone calls. So somebody was definitely trying to get in.
Wow.
9 missed phone calls and 7 new messages. So I wonder if there's a internet outage someplace or we're supposed to be off already.
Right, that could be.
But John Sebastian, awesome to have him on. Appreciate that. Also, a reminder, Scott Haynes is going to have the Chevelle. His 70 Chevelle is going to be on display at Finger Lakes Speed World. That opens up tomorrow night unofficially. The move-in night is tomorrow. And then they've got all of the activities that are planned, interactive car show, front to back, throughout Finger Lakes Mall in Auburn. If you get the chance, go out there, check them out. South Butler Dragway is going to be involved with it. We're going to be out there Saturday and Sunday at different intervals. I'm going to be helping Ed. We're going to have an oval race. And then Sunday we're going to be helping Ed with the Derby after we get done with Allen's basketball game in Penn Yan. So busy weekend ahead. That is going to do it for episode number 58, though. We appreciate everybody tuning in. We'll be back with you probably in 2 weeks, and we'll be checking in with you more on all the goings on here as we work through the off season of 2019, getting ready for the season to come. We will see everybody next time. Thanks for watching.
This has been the Final Round Drag Racing Podcast, coming to you live from the FingerLakes1.com studios in downtown Seneca Falls, New York. We'll see you right back here again in 2 weeks. Thanks for watching.